We recorded the following conversation with Pastor Dan Schultz just before the cascading catastrophe of the COVID-19 virus swept everything else from the headlines. While the situation with the presidential primaries has shifted profoundly in the past few days, the issue Dan raised in his Religion Dispatches columns remained important to consider in 2020 and in the decades ahead. So, Dan, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. I'm always happy to be here.
You focused in a recent article on campaigns' attempts to find the mythical anti-choice Democratic voter. I'd love to have you talk about it.
Well, first of all, I'd like to really emphasize that I don't see this as some kind of religious right plot to inject anti-choice thought or people into the mainstream of the Democratic Party. What I think happens is that there is some regional variation and Democratic politicians, candidates, and some religious variation. You know, you're in Louisiana. Louisiana is a pretty conservative state, so Democrats there tend to be more conservative than other Dems. So there are some pro-life Democrats out there. They're not, it's not huge. I think about 12% of all Dems think that abortion should be illegal in all or most circumstances. But what happens is that because there are some, people in those conservative areas hear folks saying things like, oh, you know, if we could, if Dems would only be more open to abortion restrictions, or even just saying that they welcome pro-life voters, they pick up all these votes. It doesn't happen. It never happens. But it's just enough to tease Dems into thinking that they should do something that they really shouldn't. It also leads to a lot of trolling, for a lack of a better term, about how these people are being mistreated. We're not welcome in our own party. We're being forced out, things like that. And what we have to remember is that these folks are small. If 12% of all Democrats are anti-choice, and about 20% of those say they won't vote for a pro-choice candidate, as they have in various surveys, that totals about 2.4% of the party. As I point out in one of the articles, that's a little lower than the 4% of Democrats who approve of President Trump's job performance. So are you really losing anything by sort of ignoring this faction and going on with your work? I don't think so.
So where does this impulse come from? Because it doesn't seem to be credible polling or research.
There's two things. For some Democrats, it is perpetually 1996, and Democrats are being spanked for not being right enough on social issues. And so you have to project that you agree with the natural conservative tendencies of real Americans, simply ignoring the polling that tells you that most Americans think that reproductive rights are important and that they should be available to people. But the other thing, and admittedly, some of the folks like Democrats for Life are really good at this. It's sort of embarrassing when somebody shows up in front of you and says, well, don't you want me in your party? Dems have a natural tendency to want to be all-inclusive. And so these anti-choice activists are able to sort of pin candidates and other people against that tendency, right? If you're really tolerant, you would tolerate even all of us.
What are some strategies to reduce the risk of falling into this political religious right rhetorical trap, do you think?
First starters, I think that candidates need to understand that just because an election is going to be close, it doesn't mean that it's going to be a swing election. Sometimes, and this is what's shaping up this year, sometimes you have to set base against base. And you can't afford to alienate the 88% of your voters for the 12%. Now, I'm thinking here about the Christian parable about the one lost sheep and leaving the 99 behind. But you can't do that in politics, right? You need everybody in the base to show up. And so you can't just alienate them by working with these other folks. I think the other thing that they need to do in that sense is understand that these people may not even be the swing voters that they proclaim themselves to be. People who vote on reproductive rights tend to vote only on that issue. And if they don't have what they want, they won't vote for your party. So you can't just say, well, you know, let's string them along and we'll appeal to them on economic preferences and things like that. It doesn't work. A number of these folks are also what we would call Reagan Democrats, or literally Democrats in name only. They're people who voted Democratic once upon a time, but may not have for years and years. So don't fall into that trap of we have to get the swing voters. You might not.
Dan, you've analyzed six swing states where you suggest religious or non-religious positions could have a dramatic impact. Talk about that for a moment, if you will.
I talked about Michigan, North Carolina, Florida, Wisconsin. The only places that I really think that any kind of outreach to anti-choice or conservative Democrats would really make a difference would be in places like Michigan or Wisconsin, where the vote totals are very, very small and where Catholic voters are very, very strong. I don't think you're going to get very far in places like North Carolina or Florida, where the bulk of religious conservatives are evangelicals. Those folks are not going to go for Democrats no matter what. You might as well just write them off. But in Wisconsin and in Michigan and maybe Pennsylvania, there are a number of conservative folks who live in the suburbs. Those people this year seem to be really disposed to going against Trump. So in those, I'm not sure that I would really throw meat to the anti-choice side, but I might fudge some of those pro-choice positions, downplay those a little bit, talk about ways that somebody like Joe Biden can work, is a Catholic, can work with Catholics, is on board with the whole social gospel or social program of the Catholic Church. That goes against my natural tendencies. I tend to say that that candidates should stay away from that kind of thing. But in these places, that might be just enough to flip a state. I think I heard a statistic a year or two ago that if Democrats had converted 9 parishioners in every Catholic church in the state of Michigan, they would have won. We're talking really, really small numbers here.
I want to encourage our listeners to read your entire article, the one headlined, How the Religious and Nuns Vote May Tip 6 Swing States. How skilled do you think the remaining campaigns really are in understanding the dynamics that you've talked about?
Sanders is, I have to hand it to him, he's pretty good about this. He went to a forum a few weeks ago and said, yeah, I think you need to be pro-choice if you're going to be a Democrat. That's his standard. I'm not terribly in favor of litmus tests, But it's the Democratic Party's right to self-define itself. And Bernie is just really, really clear about that. And I think that's really healthy. Biden is the one that worries me. I think he's learned some lessons since the 90s. And he won't be exactly bad on these issues, but he's not going to be exactly good on them. He won't push very hard on them. Now, I want to caution your listeners to remember that whoever becomes the Democratic nominee, even if they become president, they're going to be hemmed in to some extent. Trump has packed the courts. There are still lots and lots of Republican members of Congress and senators out there. So it's not like electing a president is going to make it possible for Democrats to punch through some kind of pro-choice agenda, aggressive pro-choice agenda. Whoever it is going to have to save political capital for other fights. That being said, I think Sanders has a better handle on this than Biden.
Pastor Don Schultz is a minister in the United Church of Christ who writes frequently and insightfully for Religion Dispatches. It would be a good idea for our listeners to include his work in your regular online reading. Thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for taking the time to be with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. I'm honored.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, let me say thank you so much. Your generous support of this program is vital to keeping us on the air. If you think there's value in what you've heard here, and you think it's important that others hear it as well, please make your contribution today. Find more information at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. And do you know someone who you think might benefit from hearing what you're hearing? Please commit to sharing State of Belief with just one other person this week. Do it on social media. Do it in person. Write someone a note. Just make the contact. It is incredibly helpful for us to know that we are reaching more and more people, especially at a time such as this. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. I hope that you, our faithful listeners to State of Belief, know that you are in our thoughts, not only as we plan weekly shows, but as you take care of your families, worry about jobs that may be lost, and essential dollars that are scarce, though much needed for essential purchases. Emotions run the gamut for most of us. Staying calm is not easy. Optimism takes effort. Those of us who are remaining inside of where we live grow weary and wonder when we will once again be able to move with freedom. Periodically, we feel desperately alone. Others around us feel the same. Though we are separated from each other physically, we are facing this difficult time together. We have to know we are together. Until we get together again on this show, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Getty. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.